This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Two Duggar sons now face criminal allegations involving children. One is serving federal time. The other is out on a $600,000 bond and barred from being alone with any minor children, including his own kids. The family's public image built on faith, discipline, and devotion. But the roots of this family go somewhere much darker. Amy Duggar King grew up in this world. She's Jim Bob's niece. She watched it all from close enough to see what the cameras never showed. And in her memoir, Holy Disruptor, she named the man the family never talked about. And that's where we're going to start today in our conversation. Her grandfather, Jimmy Lee Duggar, and the violence and the predatory behavior and the silence that started everything. Joining myself and Robin Drake is that woman, in fact, herself, Amy Duggar King, author of Holy Disruptor. Amy, thank you for watching the program. Thank you for reaching out and wanting to be here. I so greatly appreciate it. Robin does as well.
Oh, fanboy.
My goodness. Welcome. I feel like I know probably
thank
more
you so much.
More about you as a stranger than most people should from the book. But oh, my goodness. We got a lot to get into here today, and I want to just kind of peel the layers of the onion back and let's start.
I want to give her the best quote I loved in the entire book. I think it sets the stage for us really well. And this was, what is the truth and why is it so hard to find?
Yeah.
I love what you said there, Amy. So I thought it was a great intro for us to go down that road. What is the truth and why is it so hard to find? Great job.
Let's try and get to that truth. It's still so hard to find.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Amy, you grew up being told that you couldn't be alone with your grandfather, Jimmy Lee. Couldn't take you to school, you know, couldn't watch you, couldn't take you to a movie by yourself. Your grandmother locked your bedroom door every night. It was just kind of those silent things that you just do because that's what you do. We don't really know why. It's not really explained until later in life. Obviously, hindsight is 20/20. You now have the gift of that looking back. I want to ask you, as you do look back on that, from your own personal perspective, what does that kind of an upbringing to do to a child growing up inside that level of protection from something that you don't even know what you're being protected from?
It's really heavy to really go there and to dissect everything that I didn't know was happening and how close I was to someone who could be a predator at any moment. I say in my book, like, I literally think that he could try to hurt anyone. He wanted to hurt anyone that he could, anyone that he had access to. And it blows my mind looking back at how that generation with my grandma and grandpa and that older generation, they didn't divorce. That wasn't something that was normal. And, you know, and just like, and I don't know. It's just one of those things where I just like, wow, I was around monsters and I had no idea. And I think that equals trust issues. Even as an adult, I struggle with trust issues because it's like, I couldn't trust a lot of people growing up, and now I can't trust even more. And that's something that I'm working through, but I'm the first one to be as honest as possible and just be real with you guys and just say, if anyone has trust issues, I got them. I got a couple of those, you know?
And you've earned your badge to have them. But identifying, I mean, that's half of the battle. Like saying, hey, you know what? Something's off here. We could do better. I shouldn't have to have these trust issues. And that's, I think, the shocking thing for a lot of families and a lot of people who grew up in those sort of environments. The pattern just perpetuates itself over and over, and nobody even realizes that they have trust issues because it's just the norm.
Yeah, well, you're not allowed to have trust issues. You're not allowed to ask questions of authority. You're not allowed to question what you've been taught at all. Even I was told growing up that if anyone is, you know, over me, all the adults love me, they protect me, and not to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't because I just, that's just how it was. I never thought to ask, like, how come that is the way that it is?
Do you think that I mean, because you weren't as isolated, at least I didn't get the flavor from the book, that you were as isolated as your cousins were. Mm-hmm. And so when did you first start realizing in your own home that things are off? And what gave you the courage to kind of start asking those questions that no one else was allowed to ask?
It actually happened when I saw one of my cousins. I talk about in the book that she was, you know, this house, you guys, was like Christmas morning every day. Okay. It was so happy and peaceful, and the environment was welcoming, and you would have never thought anything was wrong ever. And it wasn't until I saw this girl, you know, my family member, someone I loved, holding her mouth closed to keep from crying so someone could hear her, rocking back and forth, you know, shaking out of control. And it wasn't until that moment that I was like, maybe not everything is so peachy keen in this family. Not everything is so golden. And when I asked those questions, I was the first moment is that I was gaslighted immediately. I had the trust issues. I had, I had the evil heart, the rebellious spirit. I had the problems, and that, Amy, don't go down this line. You know, this, everyone loves us. We are America's favorite family. We are what we preach. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. I think you're crazy, really. And so I really had to, you know, I had a lot of hard problems with believing in myself in those moments, because here's someone that I'm supposed to respect, someone I'm supposed to look up to, the patriarch of the family. And when I have these questions, he's told me that none of it is true, and it's all in my head.
You know, and what struck me with that, Amy, first of all, how old were you when you, because I remember the incident so well in the book, but it's hard to get a time.
Early 20s. So I was like, 18 when I signed the contract. 19, right. 20 is when I started to be like, wait, what is going on here? And kind of, I don't know. I guess I was naive. Clearly, I just believed what I was told and what was, you know, being shown. And I put them on a pedestal too.
Mm-hmm. And so what I'm curious about, what, and this is, so the first really courageous thing, I mean, so many throughout the book, but you were willing to and able to go to Jim Bob directly and confront him with what was going on with his daughter. And you were willing to, so even after you got gaslighted and rebuffed at that and dismissed, you kept having the courage to go back and keep confronting him, I mean, very, very, very verbally sometimes. Yeah. Where did that come from? Where did that fight in you come from? When everyone else was get along, your mom, your grandma, everyone was get along and just acquiesce, even though your family wasn't IBLP, just a very good Christian family, but his was. What gave you that spark to break out, you think, from that mold that everyone else is supposed to conform to?
I wish I knew that answer.
It's a $20,000 question, right?
Yeah, I'm like just a little bit of a rattlesnake. I am going to stand up for right and wrong. I'm going to stand up. I'm not going to be one of these that's going to be pushed aside, or that you could pay off, or that you can, you know, change my mind. I've always been that way. I guess I'm a little bit stubborn. I'm an only child, you know, and so I just have a different way of thinking than the rest of my family members do.
I love it, because one of the other favorite quotes, I think it fits really good, is disrupt whatever challenges your peace.
Amen.
And he must have been challenging your peace.
I felt that. It was a very like an easy feeling all the time over there. And I was like, man, what is going on? Like, I really like need to get it in check. So, like, what is going on?
So were you seeing, and that's a great question. I'm sorry, Tony, we'll love to go to
second. Yeah, sorry, Tony, I wasn't trying to interrupt you.
No, it's a great thing. So what you just said is, so you're subliminally picking up on incongruencies. So were you getting like things were feeling off to you? So in other words, what we typically pick up on intuitively when we're an observer of the world and very present is an incongruence between words and underlying emotion. So they're saying one thing, but you're seeing some tension in the other. Were you picking up on that?
I was completely picking up on that. Yeah, there was one time that we were all around the piano and they only sing hymns, right? They're not allowed to listen to any kind of mainstream radio station at all. And we were by the piano and Josh was singing, it was a Christian song, but it was went on the radio. And I was like, you know that song? And he was like, oh, I know a lot. And I was like, wait, what? And in that moment, I was like, wait a second, what all does he know? But I couldn't ask that in that moment, you know? Mm-hmm. And we were just singing and whatever. And I was just like, wow, like maybe there's right there, there's more to the story. So but it felt really perfect. And perfect is scary because it doesn't exist. Perfectionism, yeah. it doesn't exist. And so for me, I was like, why is everything so good here? Like, it just felt really off.
I'm curious about the feeling off, because you know a world of the Duggars before there were cameras, before all of the fame came in, before, you know, all of the offers, all of the, hey, will you use this product? And you wrote about that in your book and how that certainly can change a life very quickly. But that world before it was Christmas morning every day at that house, was it the same family? Was it the same atmosphere? Was it the same the same thing that you saw once the cameras entered the existence of your family, the Duggars over there, prior to the first documentary being filmed?
I don't believe so. I think it definitely changed. I definitely think that the money changed, the fame changed, you know, the notoriety, all of the things. And like you said, collaborations and you know, just all kinds of product placement and all of that started taking place. I think that definitely had a play in how they feel maybe entitled in their life. You know, when they were younger, they were very frugal. And they probably, you know, maybe still are in some ways, but they did thrifting. They went to a discount grocery store. They stayed home a lot. We played outside all the time. Like, we had a really good family dynamic back then. But when cameras started coming around, even if cameras weren't even filming, I felt like my uncle would be like, hello, everyone. And like, there was no camera even around. And so it was like, are you just pretending? Like, what is always performing? And you're always held to such a level because you had to show up on camera, right? You always had to be on. You always had to have that smile on your face and be ready to ask any question or to film a certain scene or whatever. And so I think it really did mess with reality.
Let me ask you the same. I'm trying to understand kind of the genesis of Jim Bob's control, because he came from, you know, obviously a very controlling environment in a different way with his father, the alcoholism, the infidelity of his father, the violence, all of that. I mean, it's a crazy world. And when you come out of something like that, we see a lot of times people also get into a very controlling life as an adult, because not necessarily that they're trying to repeat that pattern, but because they're trying to prevent that pattern from repeating itself. But in the same way sometimes, and I'm wondering if you feel this way about Jim Bob, in your opinion, if he's really repeating the pattern in a very different way. He's not necessarily, you know, the alcoholic or unfaithful or any of that, but more so the control of the family to such an extreme level with that diehard grip like his own father had. But he's steering it in his direction, and he's not seeing just how damaging what he's doing is to the family and the repercussions that take place for sheltering everyone to the level that he has. And all of the choices that he has made, steering his family in the direction that he probably truly thinks is right. I don't think he went into this, let's create a bunch of predators. But I'm wondering if it's a byproduct of taking that control and shifting it another direction, rather than shifting life to more of the middle, to more of the gray area, not the extreme this way, not the extreme that way, but where peace and sensibility and reasonable live in the middle.
No, Tony, I think you are right on cue here. I think that my mom and my uncle grew up in a very unhealthy, unstable environment in all kinds of ways. So my grandpa was not an alcoholic. His grandpa was. Mm-hmm. And it trickled down to where I don't know what happened in his life when he was younger, but he had a ton of anger. And my grandpa was extremely angry. Mm-hmm. So, and he would get angry in the drop of a hat. no matter what it would be. And he would act like a child. So he didn't, he also didn't provide for his family. And so my grandma was the breadwinner. My grandma did those things. And so I think, I do think my mom and Jim Bob grew up in a very, just like they had to have some kind of control, right? They had to have some kind of, they had to do something different in their life when they got older. And I do think that it, he, I don't think he was trying to like create monsters or like start this whole thing or be a part of a cult. I don't think that's really where his head was. Right. I think he saw this as like a great way to be with a loving family and to do God's, you know, the godly thing. And to have a, I don't think he had those like horrible intentions in mind. But I do think the control factor has like gotten a hold on him. And I think generational trauma is so real. Yeah. And I think because there was so much control from my great grandpa, control from my grandpa, control on my mom and him, that I, he just went with it and ran with it. And now it's just like something, it's like rolling down the hill. It can't be stopped.
Why do you think IBLP spoke to Jim Bob more than it did to your mom? I mean, they both came from the same, you know, world to a certain extent. Obviously they were both victimized in very different ways, but why do you think that is? Why was that the beacon of light for Jim Bob and it wasn't so much for your mom?
That's a really good question. I wish I knew that answer. I can't really speak for him, but I just think for me, I think he saw stableness, right? Mm-hmm. He saw like a loving family, lots of kids, everyone was happy. And I think it brought something into him about what he didn't have in his childhood. And so he probably dreamt of that. And it just looked really pleasing. And he was just like, you know, this is something that I'm going to start having in my home and start, you know, just entering everybody and everybody can come to my house and it'll be just one big, happy, loving thing. There's just so many problems with the IBLP that we can discuss. I'm sure we'll get there.
And riffing off of that one, you can definitely see, you know, how we're laying this up of the attraction that Jim Bob had towards IBLP because of the control, because of wanting this kind of loving family and what all the propaganda was put out there. What I'm also curious about is when one thing goes severely south with Josh, a healthy person says, we got to reevaluate. We got to take a deeper look at this. And we have self-correcting mechanisms. We have, you know, when you don't have a hierarchy and structure, which is only one person at the top that makes all decisions without a loving critic saying, hey, we need to really reflect on this, grow, advance, modify our belief system and make it better for the rest of our kids. That's what healthy people do. Yet he didn't. What is it that kept him, or seemingly from the outside in, because we're not him, what's it? How come it, there doesn't seem to be any self-correcting mechanism in here when now he has one convicted and the other severely accused of exactly the same thing?
That's a really, really good question. I honestly believe it has a lot to do with maybe cash flow. Think about it. When he was on the show, he was probably making millions. That's what's estimated. And he didn't want that to go away. That's a lot of mouths to feed. There's a lot of things have to happen in order to keep that household running. Okay. Regardless of anything else. And so I think he saw an opportunity to be like, I don't have to deal with this right now. And I can put it under the rug and everything's going to be, you know, hunky dory right now. And then we can just make our millions and then we can discuss this maybe later on, or maybe not at all. Maybe it was too much for him and he didn't even want to, he acted like it didn't even exist, you know, like out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's only so long you can run from something like that. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it has to be addressed. And there's a lot of ways it could be addressed. And from a family that has, you know, millions of people watching them, millions of people looking at them, thinking they're a shining example of how a family should work and good Christian values and all of that, you know, without truly knowing the depths of what's going on there and how different their belief system is than the average Christian family in America.
This is not Christianity.
No, not at all. But so many
cherry picked. Like
so
you said,
many people would watch it though, and they would they wouldn't look deeper. They would just say, "Well, I believe in Jesus too. They must be just like me," without ever doing the homework, without ever digging deeper. Not that TLC presented much deeper than what we saw.
But, I was going to say that. TLC did not present deeper. They did not show the IVLP principles.
No.
They did not show any of that on the show. Mm-hmm. So you just saw a loving family, all smiling, having dinner, everyone's getting along, you know, no issues at all. And everyone was like, wow, how do they do it?
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine if they actually put that graphic up of the umbrella on TLC? The show would go nowhere.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have worked. Yeah, yeah.
That wouldn't have worked out.
So they had selective memory on that as well.
When we're talking about all of that, of basically putting this under the rug, we'll deal with it in-house, you know, nobody needs to know about this, all of that. And obviously, it continues on, and it gets worse. Eventually, they end up in the situation here where he gets arrested for the material on his computer. And I know you had a computer that you had gotten secondhand well that had some interesting content on. Thank God you didn't dig deeper into that.
I did not want to. But the
fact where these, you know, biblically, trials and tribulations, if you will, come to light. It could have been a window and an area where they could have shown. They could have used this as, this stuff happens to family. I mean, your odds are fairly good with 19 children that one of them's going to be into something horrible, just playing the odds. And the fact that there was at least the one that it could have been used as a, okay, this is how we're going to deal with this situation, hold and stand for accountability. Instead, that's the exact opposite of what they did. It was circle the wagons, deny, deflect, not take accountability for it. I mean, we're still seeing Josh in prison making insane statements. Like, nobody asked for your opinion, Josh.
I don't think anyone is holding weight to his words.
No, I mean, how much of a missed opportunity do you think it was for that family? I mean, now it seems like, you know, everything is imploding. The wheels are coming off. People are talking, and really, the country is not, you know, all warm and fuzzy about this idea anymore. What a missed opportunity! Do you think that was something, though, that was even entertained or considered or thought of, or is it just immediately circle the wagons and do not give in, do not address the problems that we currently have? And do they even look at these things as problems, or is it looked at as something of less
Don't
gravity?
Stir up the brethren.
There it is. Yeah. So I honestly believe that they think that this is just going to strengthen their faith. It is something that is going to, right now they're being tested, and they're going to show their faith in how they, come together as a family, and they're united, and they're going to trust Jesus through it all, and that they are going to support their son. They're going to love their son through this.
And you can do that, but you don't. This ain't the way to handle it, though.
No. Listen, they've had so many missed opportunities to be real with the community and the world and with the media. And, you know, I've seen so many statements that are like, we have no idea what's being said. I've had so many lies being told to me. It's not even funny. And so it's just lie after lie after lie after lie, which makes my honest opinion think that he must be a one big fat liar, if you will, just someone that doesn't know how to tell the truth anymore.
And how does he come to terms with that, Amy? Because so here, one of the main doctrines of IBLP is to not lie. And yet he does it so frequently with no accountability for it. How do you think he's getting past that? How does anyone in the family allow him to get past that without challenging it? Again, no, because then you'll be outside the umbrella protection and bad things can happen. I mean, it's such a cyclical route, but for him, how do you think someone that started, you know, we'll always assume he started with such great intentions of what he was attempting to do, how can he rationalize for himself all the lies he's telling?
I think a pathological liar doesn't live in reality.
Yeah, you simple know? Answer. Yeah.
They create their own sense of being and who they are and what they're surrounding. And so I honestly think that he doesn't see the severity of any of these situations. I'll be honest with you, the IBLP language in itself, they lessen the language. They lessen the language in order to not let the actual crimes be so heavy and so huge. And so they'll call it like a stumble or a little
moral failing.
A moral failure. Yeah, they'll call it all these things, or like they had, you know, just a moment of weakness. And it's like, y'all are so delusional.
Let's talk about delusion a little bit. I'm curious. I know for your own mental health, you try to only consume so much of this, and I keep doing that. I don't blame you. Have you heard any of the phone calls between Kendra and your cousin while he was in jail?
Listen, those are painful.
Oh my God.
Oh my. I cannot.
I listened to another one today and I'm just like, what the hell is going on here? I mean, the level of seemingly mental distance that Joseph seems to have from what his crimes are. And I know we can't discuss them on the phone. That's a bad idea. But it seems to be like there's nothing going on here. Like, it's just, oh, we'll figure this out. We'll have some mac and cheese for dinner later. How are you doing? As she's like breaking down, getting IVs, can't breathe and walk.
Isn't that crazy?
And he's just like, I found some psalms.
It's almost like he's excited to have a ministry from this. I mean, just like.
It's like he found his calling.
Listen, the moment that they step into a jail cell and they like are, you know, handprinted and all the things, and they're so like holly jolly, I'm like, do you know what is going on? Like, I literally want to like question his IQ in those moments because it makes no sense. And yes, I agree with you. It is cream puffs and rainbows. And I'm like, whoa, like, you're probably going away for a very long time. And this is not a ministry. This is sick. You're never going to be like released back into society. Like, I don't understand how I don't understand. I heard that Kendra was at an amusement park yesterday.
I heard that too.
Yeah,
allegations that she was at Silver Dollar City. Your kids are
Silver Dollar City, but your kids are not even with you. You're like, let me tell you something. If my kids were not with me, I would be so brokenhearted in like a mental state. Like, you better lock me up because I would not be okay. I don't understand the level of just like,
you have to be positive. You have to put the sweet voice on. No negative emotions.
Well, I'm wondering, because that's what troubles me too, is there doesn't seem to be a lot in these conversations about the children, about their well-being, just anything about it whatsoever. And I am wondering, I'm wondering about the connection between the Duggars and children. And I'm not trying to speak about this in, obviously there's already these horrible allegations and the charges, but more so just the emotional bond that a parent has with their kids. When you have 19 kids, it's going to be difficult to have an emotional bond that's really tight with 19 kids. You know, it's difficult with a few. I have one, and it can be challenging on some days.
I have one as well, and I love it.
And it's like, oh my goodness, I can't imagine, you know, being able to be there to the level a parent truly wants to be for 19 of them. So I get that there's some distance there, but it was the way that it's structured, it's almost like the children are made for going out and doing the bidding of the IBLP into the world. It's not so much you're raising kids because you love them and you care about them, who they are and their dreams and their ambitions, and let's help them get there. It's they have a job. Focus on them having that job and doing that. So I'm wondering if that creates, and that's my opinion of it, but I wonder if that creates or has created a bizarre dynamic with Kendra and Joseph with their own children, just repeating, at least Joseph repeating the same cycle of how he was raised. Kind of hands off. His older sisters are the ones that are raising him, not so much mom and dad. They're there as figureheads, but there isn't that tight connection. And if you don't experience that tight connection as a child, it may be a little difficult to form that with your own children. Not for everybody, but for some people, it certainly can be. And that's obviously how these cycles perpetuate themselves. But I'm trying to figure out in my mind, wrap my brain around how she could allegedly be at the amusement park when her kids are in child protective services. Her husband's in, well, he's released now.
Allegedly. But
allegedly on everything. And, yeah. I'd be in the corner shaking for my children. Yeah. And she's, yeah. Going on the barnstormer, allegedly. I don't know. I mean, it's yeah. just... I can't get that, but I'm trying to put myself in their shoes, and I'm wondering, is that my long-winded question? Is that the explanation? There just isn't that type of connection there that a lot of us have with our own children, or we think of with our own children, because that's just not how the ecosystem works here with the Duggars.
So the ecosystem there is very different, and I will just tell you this. They spend a lot of quality time one-on-one with their child on their birthdays.
Ooh.
On their birthdays.
What a present.
what a gift.
You get Joseph Duggar for your birthday.
I do think there's a disconnect. Think about it. I can't imagine having 19 kids and all of them have emotions and things they're working through. And I don't even know. I don't know. I have the same questions. I think that Kendra was loved as a child. I think she had that wonderful dynamic with her mom and her dad. I hope so. I've never met Joe and Kendra's kids. I left before they had kids because I realized what the heck all of this was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, see ya. Like, this is so unhealthy. This is so ungodly. I want nothing to do with this system. I want nothing to do with it. I'm sorry. What?
No, go ahead, Amy.
No, you're good. And so I haven't met them, but I definitely see a disconnect. I definitely see how they're just like, they're like made for the Lord's army, raising up these kids, and these other kids are raising these other kids. They have buddy systems. And so I don't understand. Like, are they being cuddled? Are they being cared for the way that like a parent should care for their children? Mm-hmm. I don't know what that answer is.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. One of the things that you did a really good job of in the book too is kind of talking about that dynamic. I mean, you used to be able to go over during school when they're being homeschooled and playing, yep. Going across the field. I thought those were great descriptions. Yeah. It sounded like a lot of fun for you. But what's interesting is so the IBLP system and Jim Bob's household was so controlled, so structured, yet the children were the free-range children with zero control. I mean, it was such an interesting dichotomy about how you have centralized control but decentralized employment of it.
With a side of natural selection.
Robin, I cannot even begin to tell you guys how many times those kids could have gotten hurt. There was one time
killed themselves.
There was one time that literally, I saw a little girl almost put her hand in the air conditioning fan. Like her hand would have been completely gone. Like I've seen these kids act like wild monkeys before. So yeah, they have this rule that yes, we love our kids. Sure, we're going to protect our kids, but only to a certain extent because God's going to protect our kids.
Right.
God's going to protect our kids. And so I've seen them roam like in fields before, little ones roaming in fields, and not worried about, I don't know, a snake or poison ivy or an actual predator,
Right.
Like, it's wild to me how they are very much so godly and the whole IBLP system is really, really messed up because they believe that kids will be watched, but no one is watching them.
But don't use the God-given skills that you have to be a parent to your children watch out for them and guide the children and lead the children, which I believe is kind of what Jesus talked about doing. It wasn't like, hey, go out to the wild boars in the field and good luck.
It's like, you know, because, you know, you talk about blanket training in the book about how they train kids to get over their natural inclinations and curiosity by slapping it out of them, basically. It's like they did the same thing to parents. Your natural inclination is to parent your kid, but no, they beat it out of you. It's like, don't do that. Let them roam free.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah.
So what do you think sucked Kendra into this, saying this is a great idea? Because you can see her on these phone calls keeping that happy voice as she's falling apart physically. Her body is telling her, this is completely batshit crazy. Excuse my language.
No, I agree.
What drew her in?
I mean, probably to be a part of the family. In order to be a part of the family, you know, the women have to be meek and mild and silent, and you have to show God's love in every word you say. And I don't understand the whole sweet talk. I've never done that. I think it's absolutely the craziest. Like, it's just not natural. It's just not natural. Speak the way God made you to speak. Use your own tone, you know? And listen, I don't know. Anna still does it. Kendra still does it. They all do it. If I could get a hold of them, I would. They don't listen to me. I have tried until I'm blue in the face to be like, hello. But I am the one that's the outsider because I'm not a part of their world.
You're the holy disruptor.
They're not going to listen to me.
Amy Duggar King there in our first part of our conversation with Robin Drake. Her book, Holy Disruptor, available wherever books are sold. I highly recommend getting it. Part two is coming up next. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of that. In part two, we're going to dive deeper into what the family knows and won't say. There's a lot here to dive into. Again, press subscribe so you do not miss that. And leave us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.